This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Movie time.
Paid him, Mark. Right?
I'm very good. I'm aware that that we've got a lot of movies to attempt to get through, so my suggestion is we try and do the top ten in the way that it was originally intended.
What, with you being piffy?
One word. Shall we try and do one word?
It's not going to be possible.
Well, let's have a bash anyway, because there's a lot of stuff and I do want to have time to do bug.
Number 10, Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yeah.
A word would
do. Come on. Hey. I mean, you know what I think.
9 is The Heartbreak Kid.
Horrible.
Rendition at 8. A word, please.
Well, that was my word. Well, I'm going to do it as noises.
There's no point in doing that.
Okay, rendition. Well, you know, there are interesting things about rendition, and it's a worthy story. It's sort of, in the end, it falls too much into melodrama, because the thing about extraordinary rendition, I know other people have said this, is the film is not extraordinary enough, but the subject matter is very extraordinary.
Death at a Funeral at 7.
No, I have to see this weekend. This is the Frank Oz film. I have to see it because I have to say a couple of people have already ranked it as amongst the worst of the year, and we're getting to that time.
Right.
It was out in the 14 movies out there, so I have to see it. So Frank, the last thing Frank Oz did was he killed the Stepford Wives. So,
Eastern Promises at 6.
Up in my list of top 5 of the year so far. It's you know, you can see I'm trying to sort things out for the year, and it's really good. If you like Cronenberg, it's really, really good. And I'm not sure that it's as good as History of Violence, but I'm going to go and see it again.
5 is Saw 4.
Bore 4.
Elizabeth the Golden Age at 4.
Walter Raleigh didn't really swing from leaping burning galleon to burning galleon, and I don't believe that she wore that armour sitting on a white horse doing the Braveheart speech.
Number 3 is Stardust.
A little bit ragged around the edges, but its heart's in the right place, and it's quite enchanting in a sort of cronky British way.
Number 2, 30 Days of Night.
I mean, nice to see it going in, doing so well. I don't know if it'll hold that kind of position. I think that he's a very good director. It's not as good as Hard Candy, but certainly as mainstream horror vampire movies go, he's got, you know, it has some bite. It doesn't quite have the bite of his first feature, but it's a good mainstream effort.
And the UK's number 1 is Ratatouille.
Ratatouille. And I went and saw it again. I told you that I did. And
is that third time now?
No, second time. Not going to go again. Still have reservations about it. I mean, I think the second time round, again, you see things in it that you didn't do the first time, but, you know, it is what it is. I still think the funniest thing about it is the short film. And other people who've seen it, I think, will probably agree. The short film Taken, which is 4 minutes long, is just hilarious. But it's so often the case with Pixar that it's really hard to live up to their short films.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk for your correspondence. We're being streamed online, if you'd like to see the pictures.
Are we being award-nominated streamed online?
Oh, apparently. But so we better make it good.
let's be very
visual. I'll entertain the visual audience while you entertain the audio audience.
Okay, so let's get the behemoth out the way first. So Lions for Lambs, new film directed by Robert Redford. Robert Redford also features in it. He plays a college professor who's attempting to convince a young student to get engaged and be better than he is. Meanwhile, at the same time, two former students of Robert Redford are being dropped in Afghanistan as part of a new entrist policy, which is being set in motion by Tom Cruise in Washington being interviewed by Meryl Streep about the new let's go get them policy of the American government. So three intertwining stories all dealing in various ways with the war on terror and sort of coming to a, you know, to a head in the confrontation between Meryl Streep and Tom Cruise. Here's a clip.
Saddam violated 16 UN resolutions, and the UN responded by issuing 30-plus sternly worded statements condemning his behavior, all the while France, China, and Russia continued to trade with Saddam under the table.
And didn't we also arm Saddam in the 80s?
But here we are now.
Yes, here we are now, and don't you think it might be critical to examine how we got to this
point? How and why is not the issue now. We have to move forward. We're fighting a brand of evil that thinks the last 1,300 years of human progress is heresy, punishable by violent death. Now, if that's something that you don't feel should be wiped from the face of the earth,
I would like to see bin Laden dead and gone as much as anybody, but I just don't understand how you cannot want to look at the past, not think it's critical.
What is critical? What is relevant is the implementation of a new strategy that will win this war. A war we cannot lose.
But we're not winning it.
Yet. This new strategy can change that.
How about a strategy to bring the troops home?
So leave.
That's not an option.
So, I mean, as you can hear from that, it's a talky film. I mean, two-thirds of it are people talking in rooms, and one-third of it is two guys being dropped into the mountainous region of Afghanistan. And the main criticism that's been levelled against it is that it's talky and preachy, and it's written, the script is written by the same guy who wrote The Kingdom. And The Kingdom is like 90% action and 10% politics, and this is like 90% politics and 10% action. Now, I should say from the outset, I like Robert Redford, because I kind of like what he's done. I like who he is, in the same way as I'm sort of generally inclined to like George Clooney, other than when we're talking about Ocean's 13. I think he is a good thing. Not only do I think he's a good actor, but I think his liberal politics, which is very easy to sneer at, I think are solidly placed in, you know, good, honest, humanist values. And I think he has genuinely attempted to make films that are good, solid pieces of work. Now, in my opinion, Lions for Lambs is a good, solid, dramatic piece of work, greatly in its favour. It's 88 and 90 minutes long. I mean, it's funny because it feels, whenever a poster says Oscar-worthy performances, that normally means bum-numbingly long. You know, take a cup of coffee and a big packet of sweets, because the fact is you're going to be zoning in and out. We look back to the days of The Deer Hunter and every Michael Cimino film going on for 4 days. So it's a really snappy, tightly constructed thing. It is inevitably a contrivance, because the contrivance is that Robert Redford is the guy who taught the people who are in Afghanistan, who are there because of the thing that's happening in Washington. And Meryl Streep is playing this journalist who's news media outlets sort of rolled over during the initial Iraq war, and she's now feeling terribly guilty about these things. So there's a lot of discussion and a lot of talking and a lot of that. So, and some people won't like that. Frankly, at a time in which movies like Saw 4 are taking money, I can't see any point in being sniffy about a movie which has ambitions to say, you know what, sit down, let's talk about this. Also, in a week in which we have, for example, the documentary Crude Awakening out, which is a documentary about the oil industry, which is a very interesting story about the fact that oil is about to, you know, we've peaked in terms of oil discovery. Oil discovery will go down. Oil demand will carry on going up. We're about to hit a crisis, blah, 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 blah. Oil fuels wars. These things are all problematic.
But the next film will be Waterworld then.
It will, absolutely, in which Kevin Costner has gills. But the point is, that's a documentary, and I don't think it's very cinematic. I do think that Lions for Lambs is a feature film that deserves to be in the cinema, because even though it is people talking in rooms, Robert Redford knows how to do people talking in rooms. I mean, look at Ordinary People. Look at the craftsmanship in a film like that. Look at Quiz Show, which shows the way in which he's interested in the media selling out, in the way in which he's interested in the lack of trust that now exists between the population and the media. And also, just look simply at the performances. I mean, interestingly enough, this is from United Artists, which, of course, have been relaunched with Tom Cruise at the helm. Tom Cruise plays the sort of slightly loathsome senator, congressman, who's, you know, saying, you know, actually, we've got this great new policy, and the new policy is we go and invade all over again. And Tom Cruise, when Tom Cruise is not great, he's just that big, shiny, you know, Bing thing. But occasionally, he does these dark roles that work really well. I mean, you remember him in Magnolia.
I was just going to mention that.
Well,
I
think this is him back on Magnolia form. I mean, it's less, perhaps less showy than Magnolia, because Magnolia was so, you know, out there, and it was so alarming to see Tom Cruise in that role, which I won't go into because it's 3:30 on a Friday afternoon. But if you haven't seen Magnolia, I mean, what have you been doing with your life? Really, go get it out now. It's on DVD. It's really worth seeing, if only for The Plague of Frogs.
And by the soundtrack.
And, you know, the soundtrack, which Amy is absolutely Mann. Lovely. I got Amy Mann doing, you know, that. The what's the theme tune? Wise Up. It's Wise Up. When she sings Wise Up, and the entire cast sings Wise Up. Anyway, we've gone off on a Paul Thomas Anderson tangent. To bring it all back, Tom Cruise is basically behind the movie because he's head of UA. I mean, that's a weird thing that Tom Cruise is head of UA. But so his heart is in, and he does really good slime ball, you know, creepy, weird distrust. I mean, there is something of the politician in him. I mean, that guy could get elected because he has that total mix of, you know, big smile, but deeply creepy behind it. Something really weird going on that you just don't want to know about. And I think he does that really well. I think Robert Redford is a very, he makes films like a tailor, not a tailor. What do you call somebody who works with wood?
Carpenter,
you know, of course.
You remember the carpenters?
I remember the carpenters. He makes it, you know, it's like a well-crafted piece of furniture. I remember Friedkin once said about The Exorcist. I said, what do you think about The Exorcist now? He said, it's like a Louis XIV chair. You can sit on it. And Lions for Lambs is a film that you can sit on in a good way. And it's only 88 minutes long. And
Harry
raises
and Richard Taylor, they were a great duo, weren't they?
Oh, look, I love the Carpenters. Believe me, don't get me started on
just
the Carpenters.
Just confusing with Taylors.
No, I absolutely... That's why. You know, I bought the albums by the Taylors and I got into folk music. Anyway, so Lions for Lambs, yes, preachy. I don't think that's a bad thing. I also don't think its politics are quite as straightforward as it thinks. I think people are overlooking this, the good, solid, craftsmanlike nature of the of the work itself. And I think, hey, 88 minutes, all subjects covered nicely. Very good performance by Michael Peña, who was one of the best things in Crash and is an outstanding rising actor. Robert Redford, give me a hug.
And I think that's going to be the movie of the week. I know that's early days, but I suspect
you're wrong.
All right. Okay. Well, on the list we've got Bug. Good Luck Chuck. Now I've seen that. That goes back to our telephone booth conversation of last week. Yeah. It ain't going to be that. Into the Wild. That's the Sean Penn movie. Mm-hmm. Planet Terror. That's the second half of the
Grindhouse.
So it's not going to be that. Silk and Crude Awakening.
We've done Crude Awakening,
right? Oh, and what about Silk?
Can we wait till we get to it?
Okay, so Nida on this says, I switched off about Lions for Labs as soon as Mark mentioned intertwining stories.
Yeah, I know.
There's been way too many of these. Babel, Traffic, Syriana, and a large percentage of them are pseudo-worthy rubbish.
They are.
Would someone please tell Hollywood producers that just because Shortcuts was good, there's nothing wrong with telling one story properly as opposed to telling seven badly.
No, I agree with that criticism. In fact, in this case, it's only three stories and they intertwine in a way which makes perfect sense. The difference between that and Syriana is that Syriana keeps leaping across the globe going, hey, guess where we are now? You don't know who this person is. Don't worry, you'll find out in a bit. And if you don't, it's because you're thick. So the answer is no, Stephen. If we don't, it's because you can't direct. And actually, you can't write either, but let's move swiftly on. Can I also say, on the subject of Lions for Lambs, it has been pointed out, Lions for Lambs takes its title from something that was said about British soldiers in the First World War, allegedly, that somebody said, I've never seen so many lions led by so many asses, originally. And that then became lions led by donkeys. And then in this, it's come to Lions for Lambs. I mean, clearly, because obviously Lions for Donkeys is not going to win any Oscars, and Lions for Asses sounds even worse.
Yes, appeal to a different section of the audience.
Of the video-buying public.
What else is new, Doctor?
Okay, so two things which I'm going to do together. Bug is out this week. Now, regular listeners will remember, not this Cannes that's just gone. The Cannes a year ago, Friedkin's new film Bug, based on the play by Tracy Letts, premiered. And it's an incredibly intense story about two people holed up in a motel room. One of them is a woman who seems to be on the edge of derangement. The other one is, and she lives in fear of her horrible husband coming back to find her. The other one is a guy who is a war veteran who is convinced that he has been implanted with a bug by the government, and they get together in this hotel room and they go crazy together. And it is an incredibly intense psychological drama. When it played in Cannes, it won the Fipresky Prize in Cannes. It got really, really good reviews. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was the most exciting thing I saw in Cannes that year. And I know that I'm a Friedkinophile. I understand that. But I said at the time, and I stand by it, it was the best thing he'd made since Cruising, because he has had his ups and downs. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's made bad films. You know, The Brink's Job is a bad film. There's really big problems with Sorcerer. Deal of the Century is a terrible film. So don't give me all this, oh, everything Friedkin likes, Mark. Everything Friedkin makes, Mark likes. No,
I haven't said that.
No, but people do.
You look at me when you say that.
I'm looking at you as a representation of the general public, right? Deal of the Century stinks. Okay, it's a bad film. Right. You haven't even seen it.
No, I haven't.
And I'm getting cross at you for something you haven't even said.
But I'm not going to go and see it because you just told me
Fine.
It's rubbish.
But Bug is brilliant. Real return to form. So, and it was reviewed by Roger Ebert, big American critic, who said, wow, it's a brilliant, right back on form. It's like watching a film directed by a young man, incredible intensity, extraordinary performance by Ashley Judd. I mean, really, really standout performance by Ashley Judd, who I've never seen in that kind of level of good. Michael Shannon, who's a great rising star, you've seen him in things like World Trade Center, really ripping up the screen. And it's a psychological horror movie, and it's a kind of borderline, really dark, erotic thriller, and it's mad, and it's insane, and it's intense, and it's really stripped down, and it's like people doing their best possible work. And then for a year and a half, basically, it doesn't see the light of day. It doesn't get released. Nothing happens. It's got all these accolades. People who, it's not a big movie. It's not a mainstream movie. But I'm really not kidding you. It's really full on. And the screening that I was in, some people were walking out in certain moments. There are moments in which it's quite shocking. Other people, you either loved it or hated it. But it wasn't a film that people came out going, that was a bit boring. Now, finally, a year and a half later, it limps out in, as far as I can tell, one screen in London. No advertising, no sort of, major hoopla. I mean, I think the release was only announced last week. Meanwhile, at the same time, Good Luck Chuck is opening with things all over telephone boxes.
Exactly.
Right?
See last week's correspondence.
Exactly. All over telephone boxes, which they said last week means mark of a bad film. Not true, actually, because Shaun of the Dead was
but
heavily
apart
advertised
from
on
that,
the phone. But, yeah, I can't think of another one, but Shaun of the Dead is really the exception that proves the rule. That meaning in the proper sense of it.
Yeah. Basically, this email said, if it's advertised big time in a phone box, it's going to be a bad film. Let's take Shaun of the Dead out of it as a rule of thumb.
Well, that's like saying, all great rock bands can't have a female drummer. Let's take the Carpenters out of it. The point is, you can't take out the exception that proves the rule.
You're stretching that somewhat.
She was a great drummer. You're going to tell me that Karen Carpenter wasn't a great drummer?
No.
You're just
arguing with a teenager. I never even suggested that.
The Taylors
were great.
The Taylors, yes. And
anyway, Good Luck Chuck. Is it any good?
No.
There you go then.
So Good Luck Chuck comes along. It's a really grisly, horrible, barfsome American comedy with this really grotesquely loathsome guy. And the setup is that he's a good luck charm. Whoever he sleeps with, the next person they meet, they will fall in love with and meet the love of their life. So this is a film that imagines that all women are desperate to meet the love of their life. They exist only to take their clothes off and to go to clinics in which they have their breasts made larger. And that's the most hilariously funny thing on earth. A montage of a bloke having sex with all these women will be hilariously funny and racy in a kind of sub-Porky's way. But then he meets a woman that he actually wants to love. And here's the dilemma. You see, if he gets down with her, then the next person that she meets, she'll fall in love with. So it's terrible. So he has to really have a proper relationship with her. And that was a role that was turned down by Jennifer Love Hewitt, right? Jennifer Love Hewitt said, no, I'm not going to do that role. And that's an indication of how bad it was. And I was sitting there watching this film, thinking, this is repugnant, it's misogynist, it's stupid, it's, you know, it's badly put together, it's not funny, this guy's really, really creepy. And it ends up, incidentally, with a post-credits, during the credits, a hilarious sequence of this guy and a toy penguin. And this scene goes on and on. And they're, incidentally, they're being watched on a video, him with the toy penguin, by the guy's best friend and his new three-breasted wife, which, again, is the most hilarious thing in the whole world. And I'm literally sitting there thinking, I'm getting ill. It's like it's infecting me. It's like there's some...
It's a Woody Allen impression
it's like
coming up now.
I became like the... Yeah, and I was like... Because in Bug, what happens is the two characters start to believe that they are actually completely infested with this evil thing. And I think I've become the character from Bug. I've escaped from the William Friedkin film. I'm sitting here in Good Luck Chuck. And this thing is eating my soul from the inside. I can actually feel my soul being sucked out through my ears. I can feel everything starting to shut down. And I'm just going... And I'm thinking, we now live in a world in which Bug is getting a little opening like this, and Good Luck Chuck is getting an opening like this, and here, decline of all Western civilization and end of world apocalypse, here, possible future in which everything is better.
Why do you do a little high pitch voice?
Because that's what the Bug opening is like. It's like tiny, tiny little opening. And the big, it's like, you know, I really thought that's what we've come to. That is what we've come to.
I want to read this email. Interesting point from Nick in Old Trafford. Simon and Mark, as a keen cinema goer, just interested to get people's thoughts on this before four, but you have to be pretty smart on this. Actually, we could run this for a while because I think it's interesting.
Did I say that I loved Bug, incidentally? Was that clear?
You've just gone on and...
No, but was it clear?
No, could you go on a bit longer about it?
Bug's great.
As a keen cinema goer, I have been looking forward to taking my son to see his first film.
Okay.
Big moment. Yeah. Any fan.
Don't take him to see Bug.
I think he got
probably
that.
Not.
At 3.5, I decided the time was right and took him to see that gentle Disney Pixar production of A Cute Mouse Who Wants to Be a Chef. U certificate. That's a U certificate. Firstly, the lights came down.
It's not a mouse, it's a rat that wants to become a... It's the clues in the title.
Clearly, that's not the point. Firstly, the lights come down, and up went the obligatory, the following trailers are commensurate with the feature being shown.
Oh, right.
The first ad was for a car disguised as a devil and burning through Dante's Rings of Hell to a booming soundtrack. Having survived the ads, the first trailer was for The Nightmare Before Christmas. Hang on, I thought, that's not a U certificate, as the lanky, stitched-up skeleton, burning trees and freaky ghouls and booming soundtrack seemed to confirm. Then came a trailer for The Golden Compass, resplendent with roaring, fighting giant polar bears, assorted demons, proposed child murder and booming soundtrack. Is this a U certificate? I think not. At last the feature started, or rather a short in which a man is repeatedly beaten around the head in his sleep and is then squashed to death. Then the main film in the first 5 minutes...
He's not squashed to death. He's alive at the end.
In the first 5 minutes, the hero was repeatedly shot at, was half drowned in a dark tunnel and abandoned, all to a booming soundtrack. My boy fled in terror. I have dared not mention the experience to him, hoping he will forget and not be scarred for life. Still, it wasn't all wasted. He now knows about the joys of Cocoa Pops and Wrigley's chewing gum, as well as the joy of driving through burning hell. The warning attached by the BBFC for Ratatouille, for that's the film, says comic violence. I was expecting, given the plot, maybe a custard pie, not various perceptions of hell, alien abduction, mass extermination and a reprise of The Massacre of Hamelin, screenplay The Grimm Brothers. Thanks, Odeon and the BBFC. Next up for Max, The Exorcist.
Can I say on a serious note, it is meant to be the case that the trailers are suitable for the feature, and if you feel that they're not, I would advise you to write to the BBFC and also you write to your cinema chain, because people they do rely on that kind of feedback. Again, let me refer you to the parents, the PBBFC website, the Parents British Board of Film Classification website, where there is an area in which you can put your comments on. Secondly, I completely sympathise with that thing about the trailer, and the thing that bothers me most is that I've taken my kids to see movies in which there have been trailers which I consider to be deeply sexist and stupid. And it's not to do with violence. It's to do with, you know, pictures of pulchritudinous women in a way which I really don't think anybody should be brought up.
Because there should be a point... Oh, we need to move on. Movies. There should be a point where you look at the certificate and you know that you can relax.
Yeah, yeah.
You can walk out at any stage, you know, sure, it's going to be fine.
But I would like the certificates to not just say those things. I would also like to say, you know, has reprehensible 70s-style macho chauvinistic attitudes towards gender, you know, and therefore... I mean, I would actually like to know that sort of thing. I think one of the most offensive things is that even in the kind of that area, that just gender stereotyping is just hideous. And you think,
about you and I taking over the BBFC and being in charge?
I love the BBFC. I think they're doing a great job, but that's an area in which they can't police. It's because you can't police for my political beliefs. Unfortunately, it wouldn't work. Sadly, I'd be right, obviously.
Of course. What else is new, Doctor?
Into the Wild, the latest from Sean Penn, formerly Mr. Madonna, and then known as, you know, maker of very, very earnest films like The Indian Runner. But, of course, still cherished in most people's heart as that funny Thunderbirds puppet from Team America World Police. I'm sorry. It's just one of those things. He is very, very sincere, and he's very earnest, and therefore it's very, very easy to laugh at. And I think not necessarily in a good way, but hey, there we go. So this is the true story of Christopher McCandless, but I have to say I wasn't familiar with this story before, played by Emil Hirsch, who basically, having graduated from college, decides to give all his money to Oxfam and go away from his parents, who, for various reasons, he really does not like very much, and head off into the wild.
Outdoors, man. What's your fascination with all that stuff?
I'm going to Alaska.
Alaska, Alaska? Or City Alaska, because they do have markets in Alaska. The City of Alaska. Not in Alaska. In the City of Alaska, they have markets.
No, man. Alaska, Alaska. I'm going to be all the way out there, all the way, just on my own. You know, no watch, no map, no axe, no nothing. Just be out there in it. You know, big mountains, rivers, sky, game. Just be out there in it, you know, in the wild.
In a wild. And that's very much the tone of the film. Now, there are times when that central character, and as I said, this is based on a true story, there are times when that central character is very annoying. At times he resembles Timothy Treadwell from Grizzly Man. Did you see Grizzly Man, the Werner Herzog movie? Well, it's terrific.
I think Werner Herzog is on the programme next week.
Is he? Because I was standing next to Werner Herzog
when
he got shot. Yes, so ask him all about that.
Well, I think you're part of the programme, actually.
Oh, good, fine. Well, in that case, I'll bring it up.
Why don't you bring it up? Okay, you'll be standing next to him again.
I will.
Because he really wanted to see you to bring back all those happy memories.
I know. Listen, he's dined out on that story. I got letters sent from people who work on him, his new movie, said that Werner couldn't stop pulling down his boxer shorts and saying, oh, this is the wound I got. The BBCs, they were running and cowering, but I just stood there. Nothing was happening. It was just an insignificant bullet. I mean, the man's a hero, but every time he tells the story, he gets more brave and we get more cowardly. I'm not going to deny
it. Again, I think it's Tuesday he's on.
So. Okay, fine. So anyway, Christopher McCandless, he is a little bit like Timothy Treadwell. In fact, there is a moment near the end when he's out in Alaska when he does come face to face with a huge bear. That does happen. Now, whereas Grizzly Man had this voiceover by Herzog. So on the one hand, you had Timothy Treadwell's, you know, love of all things nature and everything's great and I hate society and this is what I want. But then you had Werner Herzog going, all I see is chaos, disharmony and murder. And here, what you get is basically Sean Penn going, yeah, man, no. I mean, yeah, but no, man. I mean, yeah. And the thing is, he is absolutely on the side of the rebellious young guy who takes off armed with nothing other than a bunch of books, bunch of literature, goes off into the wild and, you know, and is earnest and is idealistic. And things, you know, have to take a tragic turn, but along the route. It's a very, very 70s film. It has a very sort of 70s colour palette to it. It's got that sort of, you know, 70s earnest sort of, you know, indie but in a mainstream environment kind of feel to it. It's long and it's rambling and there are times when you really think, oh, enough already, enough of the, you know, rediscovering nature and turning your back on your parents and blah-de-blah-de-blah, enough. But to Sean Penn's credit, although he is overly earnest, I would settle for earnestness over fatuous, horrible, stinky, repugnant, you know, just product that we're now just swimming around in this cesspit of just corporate slug-filled puke. And, you know, then at least when you see a film like this, you kind of think, actually...
Good Luck Chuck again.
Exactly. You think maybe he's right. You know, maybe, actually, faced between that and this other guy, you'd go with it. Plus, of course, I think the film doesn't skimp on allowing the audience to feel that perhaps its central character is annoying. There's a character played by Catherine Keener as well, who plays this sort of hippie character who seems to be washed up from the 1960s, incidentally. So the time period, although it's happening more recently than that, it does seem to be a late 60s, early 70s kind of movie. It also, I think, has gone to some trouble to get the approval of the guy's family, and I do believe that he would have done that because he is a very intense and very sincere filmmaker. And so, you know, even with all its faults, even with all its ramming, I came out of it, and somebody else, and not a fellow film critic who's remained nameless, went, "Wow, that was awful!" I said, "No, it's not awful. It's not. Its heart is in the right place, and you know, occasionally, of course, it rambles. It's a rambling kind of film, but it's not awful."
Would it have been improved in any way, shape or form
by an exploding helicopter,
by having Jason Isaacs or Dave Morrissey or some of his DIY staff?
Hello, Jason.
Out.
Hello, David. Yes. I can't think. I mean, it's got everyone else in it. Everyone else, like Vince Vaughn is in it.
So if they were in it, it would be better.
It would be even better, yeah. But I generally, you know, I liked it. Now, two things we're going to do very quickly. One of them is Planet Terror, the second half of the Grindhouse double bill. You know, the Grindhouse double bill was meant to be Death Proof and Planet
yes.
Terror.
Yeah, and then, you love Death Proof
so
much. Yeah,
Death Proof was rubbish. Just Quentin Tarantino completely full of himself. So this is the second half. This is now the one they're trying to get rid of. Of course, it's better than Death Proof. I mean, still not great, but it's a Robert Rodriguez film, and it's a sort of science fiction-y story. There's a slimy, horrible chemical substance turns people into oogly monsters. Meanwhile, we have Rose McGowan running around with one leg, which ends up being replaced by a machine gun, which I'm not giving away anything in the plot because that's obviously the poster. So it is like that, the standard Grindhouse thing. Woman, you know, with machine gun leg, guys with sluggy, slimy face, ooh, you know, some grew, some stars. And it's not over as fast as it ought to be. I think the whole Grindhouse project of having the degraded film so it looks like it's being badly projected is kind of boring and tedious and doesn't work. And anyway, since it's no longer Grindhouse, since it's now Death Proof and Planet Terror as two separate movies, you know, there's no need for doing it. What I would say, however, is that, you know, nobody expected to see Planet Terror playing in Cannes. So for some reason, Quentin Tarantino's self-indulgent load of old waffle gets to play in Cannes. Robert Rodriguez's one gets slipped out. And the Rodriguez one is better. It's not great, but it makes references to Mario Bava's Planet of the Vampires, and it's got a John Carpenter-esque score. And, you know, so for the nerds amongst us, there's certain pleasures in it. And it's quite grooey. I mean, it is actually genuinely quite grooey. And then I want to just
quite
end...
what?
Grooey. You know, there's groo. Slime.
Grooey?
Pestilence.
How are you spelling grooey?
I don't know, like Gruyere, like the cheese.
Carry on.
And then finally, Silk, which is a tale of 19th century sericulture.
Now, this isn't going to be Movie of the Week,
no,
is
I'm
it?
Going to do this very quickly. I'm telling you now, Movie of the Week is Bug. But this is right. The story is...
Sorry, so the Movie of the Week is available Bug. In one screen.
I'm sorry, it's not my fault. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
that's
we need that, two. We need Movie of the Week for if you can find it, and the Movie of the Week okay. for everyone else. But do Silk.
Okay,
while
Silk, right.
It.
Michael Pitt is the guy who plays the Kurt what's it character in Last Days. Here's the guy, Kurt Cobain, you know, and he plays it like this, man.
Cobain, yeah.
So basically, he's French, but he speaks an American accent. He's married to Ikea Knightley, who's French, but speaks an American accent. He gets sent off to go to Japan, where everyone speaks in Japanese, and he sort of falls in love with a woman, and then he comes back, and then he goes back to Japan, he falls in love with a woman, and he comes back, and then some worms die, and then he goes back, and then there's some more, and then some worms die. And the whole thing is narrated by Michael Pitt with this score by Ryuichi Sakamoto, and it literally goes like, I went to Japan, bing. I got there, bong.
What's the ping and bong?
That's the Ryuichi Sakamoto score. Shh.
All right.
And then the worms died, bing, bong, bing. And at one point, he actually says, and I'm not kidding,
ping, bong, bing.
He says, I received a letter. It took me 5 days to open it. And everyone in the cinema is going, ah! It's just, honestly...
It's Ping Bong Bing one of the support characters?
Bong. Ping.
Well, that sounds good.
Boom.
I'm
terrible.
That.
It's just horrible. I mean, it's not even horrible. It's just boring. Anyway, Movie of the Week, clearly Bug.
Right, and if you can't get to see Bug, it's Good Luck Chuck, yeah?
No, if you can't get to see Bug, write to the distributors and ask why it's not playing in more cinemas.
But if I'm not prepared to write because that seems like a, you know, what's the point, and I can't find that one screen, give me another Movie of the Week.
No, wait till Bug comes out on DVD.
No,
I'm sorry, no, I'm...
Lions for Lambs.
Film of the Week, Bug.
You're so difficult.
Film of the week, Bug.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live